Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Banking on Innovation podcast. I'm very pleased to have our first European banking leader today, Maurizio Poletto. He's the Chief Platform Officer at Erste Group. Mari, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hi. So Mari, Erste Group, just for the sake of our audience's education, it's a very impressive financial institution, Austrian headquartered, over 16 million customers, 2,700 branches, and operating in seven countries throughout Central and Eastern Europe. And the digital banking platform is called George, and you helped conceive of that, and that serves 9 million customers. And the bank states that it stands for a digital banking experience that spans design, technology, and openness. So Mari, we're looking forward to hearing your perspectives.
Thank you. I'm also looking forward to tell our story.
Great. So let's start with you, Mari. In 2021, you were nominated to the bank board of Erste Group, and you've taken it's rather a non-traditional path, one might say. You were educated in branding and graphic design. You started in the creative and design group, and now you're the driving force behind George. You're the chief platform officer for the entire Erste Group. How has your leadership style evolved as your role has transitioned and expanded in terms of impact and scope?
I believe that designers tend to be extremely empathic, able to work for someone else, right? I used to say the difference between a designer and an artist, and there are many designers who believe they're artists, but the main difference between a designer and an artist is a designer is working for someone else. There is a briefing. You solve the problem of someone else. The artist tends to solve the problem of himself, right? He has his own problem to solve, right? And I think in a job like a service business, like banking is, especially retail banking, you need to be very customer-focused and customer-oriented. And so when I started to work in banking, I found an industry where actually they don't really care much about how things were communicated. I'm not talking about advertising. There are lots of money spent on advertising. I'm more talking about the digital interface, this layer between the customers and the bank, what we all, today we call the app or the interface on the desktop, on the computer, right? And there were not lots of people thinking about, okay, how do we write that text? How do we describe that thing? How can he show you a balance of your account? There were not a lot of people asking themselves, why all the transaction out of your account are marked in red and the incoming transaction are marked in green? And my first instinct is a regular retail customer normally receive one salary once a month at the beginning or the end, depends on the country. And then the rest of transaction are mainly money out. So who wants to have his transaction list full of red numbers? No one, right? So that's the first thing I eliminated. Yeah. No red number anymore. This sounds small. But put together 100,000 or small things like this, then you start building an experience that people will start enjoying. That's how I see my role in this story.
But what a fascinating commentary! You know, it's been said that banking is a noble profession, and one can think about that as it really, if you, to be noble, you really need to be empathic. You really need to understand the customer experience, customer behaviors, and be in service of customers. And just amplifying what you said.
But we have done that. Don't take me wrong. Banks have done that for hundreds of years, but just through a person. So how do you do this on screen? How do you design that journey and that experience? And I think that's a challenge we're all facing every day.
Yeah, really humanizing that digital experience. So let's talk about that in more depth. You know, Erste Bank is over 200 years old, yet George is a very innovative and forward-thinking proposition for the bank. So take us through, how was George conceived of and what is its ambition?
Actually, It's a result of an R&D initiative. So basically, what we proposed to the group, it was 2012, right after the financial crisis, we proposed to the group to set up an R&D unit. It was the time where there was the explosion of the App Store, right? And we put on the table five conditions. We said, we want to have a certain amount of money per year for 3 years. And we said, look, if you're not happy after 3 years, close it down, close this office down and store it, bye-bye, no problem. Second condition is we want to have a separate office. We don't want to be sitting inside the bank. We want to have an office somewhere else. The third condition was we want to be able to hire people from the market, not taking people from inside the bank organization. So we wanted to bring people from different industry. We wanted to be self-sufficient, right? From the idea to the delivery in production. We did not want it to be dependent on someone else. And the fifth condition was we want to have an office with a kitchen. It sounds like a joke, but it's not. For us, it was very important to have a kitchen. The concept was that every Friday, the whole team came together for breakfast and discussed any idea. From the secretary to the most senior engineers, we all sit together and discuss our idea. This we did for 3 years. And every second week, the bank board was joining the breakfast. And they were presented our idea. So we were presenting them their idea. And that was a totally different organization, totally different culture, different way of accessing content. I remember we decided not to have chairs around this kitchen table. We had benches because we said, well, if you sit on chairs, you can relax. On benches, you need to stay straight. So you probably don't really, you pay attention. And that's how we build our culture. And that's how our project started. So we tried many apps and many different applications. And then one of the projects we initiated there was actually we looking into the existing platform and say, can we do something better than what the bank was currently doing at that time? And we give the task to two engineers, a back end and a front end engineer. I did a couple of design sketches and some other people as well. And then within maybe a month, they came up with a prototype. This was the first prototype of this project. And then we had to find a name. And I remember clearly that we had to avoid that people would start killing this baby or this project right at the beginning. So we had to find a nickname for this project. So we decided randomly that the nickname was, let's give this project a code name. And the code way was George. Pure random. No marketing. Nothing. And so management loved it. And then suddenly something unique happened that everyone in the bank organization, I mean, you have to imagine Esther Group is 45,000 employees in seven countries. Everyone in Esther Group who were not supposed to know about this project, but, you know, normally management speaks a lot, started to ask, what the hell is George? No one knew what George is about. And there was really curiosity about the fact that there was a project under a certain name, right? And of course, it was also important that the management were impressed. And then we thought, Jesus, if that works within a complex social environment and our organization, it may work as well in the market where we're going to launch it. And that's where we decided, okay, let's keep the name and go to the market with that name. And then, of course, like every good architect would do, after you design a nice building, you sketch it on a towel or a napkin and you show, oh, my idea was done in a restaurant, whatever, which is not true. It's always done after. Same for us. Then we figure out this was a nice coincidence. George is the code name invented at the beginning of the 20th century to call the autopilot of the plane. So if you would tell your pilot assistant, activate your autopilot, say, switch on George. So George is the code name for autopilot. And then we had this idea that it would be really great if we are building the autopilot for your finances. And that's where the whole thing started.
Wow, fascinating. So say more about the problem statement or the white space that you were trying to address with George.
So on one side, we had the market situation. More and more of our customer had digital devices at their hands, either smartphone or computers. And more and more of those customers were interfacing with their bank through those computers. But in most of the cases, they find themselves confronted with an application which was not really designed for the purpose of having a dialogue with them. So we decided at that time to build this project around three pillars. And the first pillar, which was what we did the first year, is a pillar where we call access and understand. So we want, in the first phase of the project, we wanted to solve two problems: access and understand. Access means everyone should be able with one click to access their product, to see their product. And we build the first application where you don't need the password. You just open and go in and you see everything you have. And the second thing is say, okay, now this will generate all our customer, hopefully many of our customer who will be able to have access to all their product. And now we have the responsibility that we design those product in the most understandable way. And that's why the design-driven approach became very handy, because we started to work on the visualization, on the language, on the wording, on the text, on how do you display the balance of the product, how do you display the transaction. We show immediate. I remember we had logos. No one had logos at the time. We had logos on the merchant. We were rewriting the language of our product that they would understand them better. And so this was the problem. It was perceived very well by in all the markets where we launched it.
Wow, what a journey. You've been very explicit around trying to humanize this banking experience in the lexicon and the experience as well. You know, banking has a name. How does personalization fit with these capabilities? Because it seems like it's very inherent in what you're trying to deliver. And how does George deliver a more personalized experience?
Personalization is the key. I still believe most of the banks today are spamming their customers. They are sending irrelevant messages. And I put myself into this. So we are still, in many situations, we are spamming our customer. You know, we throw messages on the big millions, chunk of millions of people and get a return, a conversion rate of 0.2, 0.3, 0.7%, which is, I always, when I talk to the team, I always refer to the fact that on the public internet, I can accept a conversion rate of 1% because you have no idea who is watching your webpage. Fair enough. But Jesus, in a banking app, I know everything about you. I know exactly how much money you have. I know who you are. I did KYC. I know all the detail of your life backwards 7 years. I cannot have the same conversion as you would have on the public internet. You know, I know everything about you. So, and that's pretty much the challenge. So that's what personalization is about. It's about going, engaging with a customer at the right time, with the right product, with the right language for them. And I think we just started now to understand how to play with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said it really well. And this is something that is also something that, you know, I personally am very passionate about. And I think we have we're like-minded around this, which is that we're in very early innings of this entire experience around personalization. And as you said, it's much more than just telling somebody their birthday or even delivering a kind of a, you know, even a nice user experience. It's more than that, right? It's actually leveraging the data and then translating these offers. And by the way, as you commented, some of these banners, even in the authenticated site, they're highly sophisticated, meaning you've done a lot of modeling behind it, right? But still, it comes across to the customer as it's just a marketing push, right? But when you embed in that the actual customer transaction activity, and you show them why this interaction is valuable for them, or how it can benefit them, then you get a movement from 0.5, 1% up to something much bigger. And I think there's a lot of room for us to grow there as an industry in embracing that idea.
Yeah, and there is a complexity that, you know, as a bank, as a retail bank, and we are big, Yes. What do I have? 20 products in total. And not Amazon. I don't have 3 million products. A bank has 20 products, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, it's even more important that when I engage you with a proposal, I know exactly when to do it, with which language, and with which product, number one. The other complexity is the fact that the more you look into customer data, the more you have to be precise, in a sense that we are dealing with probably one of the most sensible information you have, which is your money.
Yeah.
So we don't have a chance to make lots of mistakes there, because this is, you know, this is money, right? Actually, I cannot make mistakes on money. But even when I do prediction or when I do aggregation of numbers, right, I need to be very precise.
The bar needs to be higher, and particularly when you're delivering advice about your money. So let's transition to this advice and advisor. Some banks will shy away from this term, yet Erste Group has been pretty explicit about its desire to be a financial health advisor and to deliver banking advice. What's behind this sentiment, Mari?
A bank, it grows with the country where they operate. If the country is growing, if the health, financial health of the country is growing, the bank is growing, right? If the country is going down, the bank is going down. That's how large bank, like in our case, are, right? So we are very much connected with the society. And therefore, we see our role as enabler of those societies to develop. And so we thought about, what do we need to get this economy growing? Well, we need to look at the health, right? We need to look at the health of these people. We need to make sure that they are making the best use of their money. We need to make sure that they're thinking long term. We need to make sure that, you know, in finance, the concept of financialization is very simple. It's built out of three buckets. There are different definitions globally, but I'm making a very simple summarization here. The three buckets of financial health are you basically have enough money to pay your needs, you know, your bills, your rent, and so on. That's what we need to do. Number one. Number two, you need to have some money for emergency, you know, some reserve money for emergency. That's saving. You know, we are a savings bank, so that's very important for us. In case something happened, you're not really in trouble. You have enough time to find a new job or to repair your car or to buy a new fridge or whatever. And the third pillar is you're able to plan long term. So you're putting something on the side. So you're building for future. You're not just spending everything you have. You're also planning ahead. You know, you're making the right investment for you and for your family. So this is the three principles, the three pillars. And we said, how great would it be that all our customer aim, not only aim, but we help them to get to a healthy status. And then we quickly realized that this dream, and we know it's a dream, it's not technically not possible that everyone will be healthy, right? But the ambition to get there and the dream of helping our customer to get there will be beneficiary for the society where these people are living, for themselves first, for the society where they're living. But we are totally confident it will be also profitable for us and for us as a business organization. So I think there is this perfect combination of interest that makes the whole financial story meaningful for us. And that's what we are working every day for.
So by declaring this as an ambition, it creates greater purpose, not just for your employees, but for the bank overall and kind of how it engages the community as well.
Yeah. Banking is a complicated topic. I mean, and I always bring this example. None of our customers, when they go home from work or from school and they sit in the bus or in the train and they take their phone out, they're not opening their banking application, right? They have 50 other applications to open before they open our application, right? Therefore, for instance, we don't measure the amount of time our customers spend on our application. But we rather measure the type of engagement we have with them and how much we can help them on things and how much things we take over from them and say, well, we take care about this, so you don't bother, free of mind. We make sure, so have a confidence that when something happens, we come to you. Now we have the majority of our customer basically will experience that thing digitally through a glass. They will not visit the branch at all. And then our mission, our challenge is how can we translate that advisory experience through a glass? And we already have the first example, and we already have the first number that prove that actually customer likes this. They like this advisory, especially they like advisory which is purpose-driven and not product-driven. Too many banks in the past have been doing advisory product-driven, because that's the product they have to sell rather than that fits in your mix. And we had a big strategy a couple of years ago where we said we go purpose-driven advisory. Means we show you your finances holistically. We say, look, that's how, if the target is being, it's your financial well-being and improve your financial well-being, then this is the ROI you need to consider. And here you see, here you're doing fine, here you can improve, here actually you need to do something. And this purpose-driven advisory had been extremely successful. And actually, at the moment, in the different experiment we have across the group, we see an increase of conversion with that advisory approach more than 3 times. And I think these numbers are really encouraging us to continue to develop in that way.
Yeah, well, it's very compelling when you see better impact on the customer and their experience and satisfaction and on the economics of the business. So let's talk about one of the other challenges that you have. I believe George operates in 6 countries throughout Central and Eastern Europe. So share with us what you learned, Mari, that was unique by market. And how do you incorporate this into a digital experience, which you're trying to create some standardized themes around?
Originally, our theory was, listen, if Facebook can operate the same platform across the whole world, we should also be able to operate the same platform across our region. Because we, like most of the bank today, I think we are one of the few European banks who have one platform in all their country where they operate. Many other banks, they may have the same design, but they have different platform in every country. The argument was, no, our market are different, so we need to do it ourselves. So that's kind of, this was kind of, every country said, look, our people are different, our product are different. And we said, not really. And I think we see a conversion here. So we are totally convinced that we can cover the whole region, the whole Europe, potentially the whole world with a proper interface. Yeah, maybe you should eliminate the Middle East or Arabic country. They have a different concept for banking and lending, for instance. Maybe US is slightly different. But in general, Europe, I think we could, our interface and our platform can serve the whole Europe. So we believe that there is no need to do things 6 times, everything 6 times. That's what we have done before we came in place, right? Which is rather inefficient if you think about it.
Yeah.
That's nothing that cannot be solved with proper APIs and proper good design and proper technology. It's solvable. And my point is, you know, digital banking is digital banking. And digital is about scale. There is no sense to do the same thing 3, 6, 7, 8, 10 times.
Very good. And now, Mari, you're kind of uniquely suited because you're deep technically and in design, of course. So help us understand some of the technical challenges to deliver on this ambition. And I know some of them must be around data accessibility, how you adapted your front-end experience, integrating with different platforms by having a unified platform experience. What have you seen as some of the most salient technical challenges, and how did you address them?
Basically, the way you were building customer-facing application in banking were basically creating direct connection from the backends to the applications. No API whatsoever, no documentation, nothing. Direct connection, it was the fastest way, the most secure way, and straight through. So we create this gigantic networks of different connections, right? Zero reusability, zero documentation, nothing. So what we did is we built a group layer API where actually we got all the data from the different core banking systems on this layer. We harmonize it and we expose those information to the front and to the application. George is not a front-end application. There is a huge backend, but still we are exposing those information in an harmonized way to our backend and through the backend through our application.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how this architecture works. The beauty of it, you mentioned data, is that we quickly realize that we have done this harmonization work for all transactions coming from the country, from all product coming from the country, from all balances coming from the country. And we did those harmonization for the online platform, for the digital platform. But then we realized that probably we could use exactly the same architecture also for the data and serve the rest of the bank with an harmonized data. And therefore, we started a new project where we are building a group data platform where we do the same thing we have done for George, but the target is not to expose this data to customer, but basically to expose it to an environment where everyone else in the bank, from risk to compliance to business, can build models from anywhere in the world, from anywhere in the group, and being able to leverage that aggregation. Because in the past, again, models were built on top of local data six different times, right? There was no way to leverage models in multiple countries because the sources were different. And so we utilized that aggregation mechanism we built for our digital platform, and now we're expanding it to other parts of the bank too.
So your architecture that you built, which was to be able to expose through services, data, workflow, customer information, that's what's allowed you to now have a more, let's say, you know, unified experience and one where you're delivering more intelligent interactions.
Correct.
Terrific. So along those lines, you've also, Mauri, embraced open banking. And as you talked about, you've adopted this API model to enable bank services. Talk more about what advantages this gives, not to the bank, but to your customers.
The reason why George looks like this, so is an independent platform on top of different core banking system, because I really believe I could do this and then I can plug it in on any bank in the world. I thought it's completely bank agnostic. This was my idea, my vision at the beginning. And I was totally believing the PSD2 in Europe will help us to do that, right? Now, if you see the success of PSD2, it's still very limited, especially for the account information services, right? And, you know, it's limited in scope. You only can have access to payment accounts. So savings account are excluded in some country. Credit card are excluding. Loans and lending is excluded. Investment is excluded from PSD2. In some country, there is different interpretation of what a payment account is. In some country, a credit card is considered a payment account. In some country, it's not. So still a mess, right? I still believe we will get there. I still believe that there will be interfaces where everyone who has a license or a licensed entity or a licensed company can basically, with the permission of the customers or the consumer, can connect their bank account to any platform they want.
Yeah.
But I think the interfaces are not mature enough. And so we have, we enable, for instance, in Austria, to bring into George your account from a different bank. So we do this, and we do this in other countries as well. The amount of a retail customer using that service is limited because most of retail customers have one bank. And the one that have multiple bank connection, they have it on some product like investment that they are not covered with open banking. And therefore, it's very hard to get to build this aggregated view. On corporate is a different story. That is more relevant. Open banking is, I believe, is much more relevant on corporate because if you are an SME or a small, medium-sized entity, you normally have multiple bank accounts with multiple credit lines. So it would be nice to have an aggregated view of all your bank connection. But on retail, we're not there yet. I'm looking forward to PSD3. I hope that they're going to expand the product coverage. And probably we will see further iteration on that topic.
Yeah, much more to come on that. Well, you've given us so much to think about. Why don't we try to bring this to closure around what are the key outcome metrics for George and what can you share about its performance to date? And what do you think is on the horizon for Erste Bank and George?
I predicted in 2024, we probably middle, end of the year, we get to 10 million using the platform. Also, we are 981. I see the real-time number now. So I think we're going to get to 10 million rather soon. When I started in Erste Group, we had maybe overall probably 4 million digital customer. So there was a growth. It's not only because of us. It's just the whole society has developed and everyone has a smartphone now in the end and so on. So the thing is going very well. More interesting for us and as an automotive metric is more than 80% of our active customer are digitally active, which is more important for me. It means, you know, as a bank, you have customers which are less active because they maybe have product like insurances or some product that don't require to be active. But if you look at the active customers, they're all, most of them are digital. And most of them, more than 70%, are primary customers. So basically, they rely on us to manage their finances, which is very important.
Wow.
But I'm more interested in the input metrics in a sense that they define our future success and our trends. And in the input metrics, we are looking at, for instance, number of customer with access to investments. You know, we want to grow the number of our customers that not only have an account where they receive their salary and they make their payment through a card, but they also put some money as a reserve. So we look at the input metrics is saving accounts and reserve, but we also look at input metrics in direction of when you have an investment account. It doesn't matter if in the investment account you have little money because that's what you can afford, 100 euro, 200 euro, or you have 1 million euro. That's not the point. The point is you have an investment account, you have made a decision to open that account, you are planning long term. Many of our people, our customers who don't have big funds, big liquidity, but they are putting like 50 euro a month into a funds, and they, you know, they are slowly building their future headset, and we measure how we grow those percentage, and that's a very important because they define how our business develop further.
Excellent. So let's wrap up with an industry perspective, if you will, Mari. Which is, what do you think that customers will expect from the banking industry in the next 3 to 5 years, for which the industry is not well prepared?
Very interesting question. I think that the customer of the future are expecting to receive the same level of quality advice and service through an app. It means everything in real time. When they send a message, you get an answer immediately. It's totally personalized. The machine knows exactly who you are and what you do, no mistakes. So they're expecting that experience like a human used to do in the branches. Someone who knows your family, was the banking assistant of your grandfather and your father and you now. You know, they expect this experience at any moment in time, 24/7, 7 days a week, in real time, very accurate. And I think this is going to become such a standard that we have to be very good in that. We need to be super in that. And we need to be superhuman for our customer who actually goes to decide to spend an hour going to the branch because they have that problem and want to sell it out. Then we need to be superhuman, and we're going to use technology to be really good there. And at the same time, we will be required to do exactly the same thing on the digital, on the glass. And therefore, we need to be super digital there as well. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge because many regulatory parts of this industry are exactly built to, let's say they're not built to enable that experience. I think we are almost at the end of our conversation. So if we start the regulatory discussion, I think we will need to have another podcast on this.
Yeah.
That's something. And And not only we need to get better into tackling this problem, but I think we need to find a way to deal with the hard regulatory framework around these things, which is not really done for those digital thing.
Well, you know, the way you described it, it seems like a very daunting challenge. But the other way to look at it is that it's also a terrific aspiration. As an industry, if we can evolve and get better along this aspiration of being able to deliver real personalized interactions and advice that makes a material difference in the customer's well-being. And as you said, it's not just the bank, it's also the ecosystem, the regulators as well. Well, that is very uplifting. In fact, it's a very compelling aspiration for us all to move in this direction. And as a result, by the way, we will end up with a stronger and more loyal customer franchise and a much, you know, much stronger trust. And so it not just around, improving the experience, the relationship dynamics, the customer value perceived, the value being delivered by the bank. There's opportunities across the board to really achieve a next level of outcome there.
You know, we used to, if you talk with any bank executive, especially the one that expert in retail banking, they will tell you, no matter where, in the US, in Europe, is the same. We can serve on a certain quality between 10 and 20% of our customer base. Not more, right? Now, the question is, how do you serve the other? And normally the other are the one who actually need help more because the wealthy one are the one who comes in. And normally banks like to serve the wealthy one because they make more money out of the wealthy one, right? The point is, technically, the one who really need help and support are not those one. They are the other one who actually. And so I think we are now on the inflection point, especially with AI, that we can start thinking about building system that really help everyone, because we can scale this up to the individual, to the single individual. And I think this is an aspiration that I think is a lifetime aspiration. I don't know if in my banking career I will be able to manage it, but I'm very excited at least to start it, right? And I think if it works, I mean, it would be amazing.
Addressing the cost to serve economics so that banks can actually deliver on the needs of 100% of their customers, it's a great aspiration.
Absolutely. That's a huge mission.
Well, Mari, you've given us such great wisdom, and I appreciate just the unique perspective you have. First being part of such a prominent organization that's so innovative, but also just your personal journey and how you bring this combination of your, not just your passion, but also your experiences to bear to really make an impact on Erste Group and its customers. So thank you for sharing your insights and thoughts with us.
Thank you, Jody. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you for joining another episode of Banking on Innovation. Make sure you subscribe to get future podcast episodes. Please follow us on LinkedIn and at personetics.com.